Good evening. Thank you very much for being here, and thank you, Manuel, for your generosity in introducing me. And especially thank you to all the organizers and Amane, and then also my co-panelists, which I have a privilege of sharing this podium with, Tarek Ali and Francisco Rico. As it has been advertised in the flyer promoting this forum, I will talk about the fundamentalist and capitalist war on women. 2 months have passed since the terrorist attacks on the people of the United States. Much has been said and written on the tragedy and its aftermath. September 11 has brought into sharp focus the web of contradiction that make up our world. The Bush administration has launched the second major war of the post-Cold War era. The first major war was on Iraq a little less than 10 years ago. And since the second major war a month ago in Afghanistan, many die every day, and many are on the verge of starvation. Even the strictly censored and self-censored mainstream media talk about an emerging catastrophe. However, I am not going to focus on official discourses by the mainstream media and then also their misrepresentation of the war, while I have to refer to the dominant discourses as a starting point. I try to offer some critical remarks on the politics of activists who oppose the war, who are against racism, and are concerned about the violation of our civil liberties. It is time to critique the position of those to the left of the center. The terrorist attacks and the ongoing war have highlighted many contradictions of the new capitalist world order. However, while the contradictions are prominent and as a result must be easier to understand, debates are often obscured in mythology and myth-making. If some of the people of the planet had no knowledge about Afghanistan, now the majority see why they have, what they have never seen before, the destruction of the people and resources of Afghanistan. If the majority did not know about Taliban's terrorization of the women of Afghanistan 2 months ago, now they see that how the Taliban's regime has terrorized the women of Afghanistan. The rise to power of the Taliban was a catastrophe for the women of Afghanistan and, in fact, women everywhere. Women of Afghanistan resisted this tyranny in solitude. It is only recently that we hear about RAWA, Revolutionary Association of Afghan Women, and other secular Afghan women's groups in the mainstream media, while during this period the Iranian women's press in exile regularly reported on the oppressive situation of women of Afghanistan. The United States played a leading role in bringing the misogynist Taliban monsters to power. We know that all contemporary wars have been patriarchal wars. The warlords of Northern Alliance are equally misogynist. I believe that the anti-war movement here in Canada and elsewhere in the West has a tendency to ignore the gendered nature of this war. The anti-war movement that has also this tendency to ignore the symbiosis of capitalism and this misogynist power. The anti-war movement also has the tendency to look at these contradictions and consider the contradictions but fail to explain it fully. The anti-racism movement is justifiably concerned about the current racist attacks against Muslims in Canada. However, it fails to reject both racism and Islamic misogynism. This is a serious weakness. It amounts to silence about patriarchy and misogyny. And let me elaborate on this point. Many of us have rejected the simplistic claim that the current war is one between civilization and barbarity, between freedom and tyranny, or between democracy and despotism. We know that these constructions of reality are not only simplistic, but also serve the policy of war, imperialism, and domination. According to this type of propaganda, there are two sharply polarized, two highly conflictual camps. In one camp, there lies the United States and the so-called free world. In the other camp, there is Islamic fundamentalism, bin Laden, the Taliban regime, and their supporters. While the left has rejected this simplification or misrepresentation, there has not been enough emphasis on clarity on the alternative. I argue that it is important to emphasize that the two sides, that the U.S. administration and the Islamic fundamentalists, do not form a binarism. They are not on the opposite side of a conflict. They do not form a contradiction. Historically and politically, as I mentioned above, Islamic fundamentalism and Western capitalism form a symbiosis, not a contradiction. Historically, the two sides coexist and mutually benefit from the coexistence, much as slavery and capitalism coexisted in the United States for at least three centuries. Islamic fundamentalism and capitalism coexist, cohere, coincide, collude, and correlate. There is, at the same time, a real divide on the global level. There is a polarization, a contradiction, a conflict between two sides. Who are included in these two sides? On the one side, the extreme right in both camps include racial supremacists who set fire to refugee and immigrant homes in Germany and Britain, Christian fundamentalists who blow up abortion clinics and assassinate doctors in Canada and the United States, the terrorists of Oklahoma City, the KKK, and the neo-Nazi who are armed to teeth, and also the Islamic fundamentalists of the ruling Taliban regime in Afghanistan and those in power in Iran. Also, ultra-Orthodox Judaists who advocate the enslavement of women and the uprooting of Palestinians. And also in this camp, the rule of global capitalism, which creates poverty and kills some 35,000 children every day. The military-industrial complex, which sold $798 billion of arms last year and creates weapon markets and generates wars. These are all on one side. On the other side, however, there are the majority of the people of the world who are threatened with hunger, unemployment, poverty, prostitution, war, massacre, genocide, gendercide, ecocide, and dictatorship. This side includes people from the West and the East. If in France farmers are drawn into a bitter struggle against globalization, in the Middle East, women are a major target of Islamic fundamentalism. Where do so-called the great powers stand in this polarization? The practice of major Western powers is a guide. These states have generally opposed social movements which struggle for justice, freedom, equality, and democracy. If there is any doubt about the symbiotic relationship of Islamic fundamentalism and Western powers, the history of U.S. relations with the Islamic states of Iran, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and Afghanistan will dispel such uncertainties. The United States, Britain, and France have colluded with Islamic groups, whether in their fundamentalist or non-fundamentalist forms, to achieve two major goals. Goal number one, using Islam against social movements for democracy, independence, and socialism in the North Africa, the Middle East, Central Asia, and South Asia. For example, the most serious offensive against the struggle for democracy was Western support for Islamic groups during the anti-monarchy revolution in Iran in 1978 and early 1979. The United States, Britain, and France were scared by the possibilities of leftists, socialists, and Democrats achieving state power in Iran. Thus, they directly and indirectly supported Khomeini, where they failed to save the Shah. The coming to power of the left in Iran would have enhanced revolutionary struggles throughout the Middle East, as the nationalization of British oil industry in the early 1950s in Iran had destabilized other Western puppets state in that region. This explains also why the U.S. conducted a coup d'etat against the democratically elected government of Premier Mossadegh in 1953 and reinstalled the Shah of Iran. And the second goal is the using Islam against the Soviet Union during the Cold War period. In 1978, the West was interested in bringing Islam to power in Iran in order to prevent the extension of Soviet influence in the country and the region. This was part of the American project of creating a green or Islamic crescent on the southern borders of the former Union, former Soviet Union. This crescent would have saved Iran from so-called communism and would have encouraged Islamic dissent in the Soviet Union's Central Asian republics and Azerbaijan. Although the left understands this history, it is less clear about the fact that the target of most Islamic forces are the people of the Middle East, especially women, secular Democrats, and communists. Islamic reactionaries want to achieve state power, and some of them, like Khomeini and the Taliban, have tried to export the reign of terror to other countries in the region. There is thus no convergence of interests between the people of the Middle East and reactionary Islamic groups. There is no convergence of interest between any form of Islamic fundamentalism or political Islam and the women in the region. The student movements, women and the youth of Iran, have already called for the separation of the state and religion. They have revolted not only against the Islamic regime, but also against the official religion, which stones women to death. One issue that complicates the debate is the racist attacks on Arabs, Muslims, and those who were perceived to belong to one of these groups. The official remedy has been media talk shows, official pronouncements, conferences, and letters to editor, which distinguish between good Islam and bad Islam. The Islam of the terrorists is the bad, and the rest of Islam is good. This has led even to the invitation of imams and mullahs to secular schools to teach others that the most Muslims are good Muslims. We should indeed oppose all forms to discrimination against Muslim. It is important, however, not to underestimate the unleashing of Islamic fundamentalism against the peoples of the Middle East and especially women. It is, I believe, useless to propagate the pacifism of Islam or the contributions of Islam to Christianity or to world civilization. While such lessons are not harmful in themselves, they cannot address the problem of racism. A more effective way to oppose racism and war is, I believe, to deal with the ties that bind Islam and the exercise of capitalist power. This can be easily understood by focusing on women and remembering that fundamentalism and capitalism share the following features. Both are patriarchal, militaristic, despotic, imperialistic, and misogynist. Also, both cultivate a culture of violence, especially in Afghanistan and Iran, where the entire nation is turned into spectators of public violence and execution of women. Instead of advocating the women-friendliness of Islam, it is more appropriate to talk about Islamic-based forms of misogyny. The treatment of women in Afghanistan should be considered an attack on all human beings all over the world. Some of the activists on the left have been persuaded by theories of cultural relativism and many varieties of postmodernism which ignore or justify the oppression of women under the guise of respect for difference. These positions are, I believe, misogynist. How can one have any respect for a culture that enslaves women? The claim that women in the Middle East are Muslims and love their religion ignores their experience. There is a century of feminist and women's movement in the Middle East. In 1909, a member of the Iranian parliament introduced a bill in support of women's suffrage rights, and the British press covered the event and, together with an American resident of Tehran, claimed that Iran was ahead of the West in advocacy of women's rights. The women's movement of the Middle East were predominantly secular. Instead of presenting Islam as a woman-friendly or feminist religion, the left should avoid such misrepresentations and look at the international women's movement as a real convergence of the interests and destinies for the East and the West. Patriarchy is universal. Patriarchy is universal, and resistance against it is universal too. The struggle against racism and neo-fascism can succeed only if it is conducted on the solid basis of social movements such as the struggle of women against both religious and secular fundamentalism. 3 years ago, a group of women in Uruguay, in South America, showed us how to struggle for building a new world. Although they did not know much about Afghanistan, they had heard about what the Taliban regime had been doing to women. They decided to protest in solidarity with the women of Afghanistan. They went to the downtown plaza, Sagancha, and discarded their dress and demonstrated completely naked. They said that it was against their culture to go naked in the public, but they did so in order to express their anger and solidarity with Afghan women. Here is what they wrote on their leaflet. The Latin American women cannot ignore what the Afghan sisters are going through since in 1996 the forces of the fundamentalists of Taliban took over the power. The victims of this crazy act of the fundamentalists are once again women. Converted in hostages, they have lost all their rights. The ones that are not killed prefer to let themselves die because it is the only form of freedom. How many women should die before the world reacts? Where are the organizations of the human rights? What do the governments do that they say they are democratic? We are confronted with a crime of humanity. The victims are women, but the rights to life make us all, women and men, responsible. No more to the genocide of the women of Afghanistan. We are tired of death. We are the ones that bring life to this world, and we want life. Let me end by saying that I think the left needs the courage, determination, and the depth of understanding of these women of Uruguay. This is how the lines can be drawn between oppressors and the oppressed. That is how the oppressed of the world can unite against both fundamentalism and capitalism. Thank you.